I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast. Late on a Tuesday, where I am now joined by someone who is covering a team that we think might be inching towards some kind of sustainability. We'll see. It's been a crazy season thus far in Canuckland, but Jeff Patterson is here. Jeff, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here, man. So for the folks that have not been totally ingrained in what's going on with the Canucks to start this year, the first 25 games or so, what has happened to the Canucks? Why did they clean house? What is going on in Vancouver at the moment?
Well, I don't know how much time we have here, but let's get after it. The Coles Notes version, I suppose, is this team just so woefully underachieved based on organizational expectations. This is a team that traded away a first-round draft pick for a second year in a row in the offseason to Arizona, this time to pick up Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. It was all about the here and the now. The general manager had stated that he believed this was a playoff team. And then they proceeded to win 8 of their first 25 games and were mired in the basement of the Western Conference, really the league standings. And so something had to give. The best players were just not performing and certainly weren't producing. And some of it's on the players, obviously, but it just kind of felt like with guys like Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and Bo Horvat, those three in particular, their offensive production was down and they weren't showing any signs of coming out of their funk anytime soon. And you have to wonder about a coach and his messaging and his ability to get through his best players. And Travis Green tried everything. He played guys in positions to succeed. He shortened the bench and cut their ice time and tried to send a direct message. And, there just wasn't any sort of response whatsoever. And the fans were getting impatient here in Vancouver. Again, they had been promised a whole lot better. And it's been a long time. Like, the Canucks had a little bit of success in the playoff bubble in Edmonton, but yeah, I think in hindsight now, you just have to see that for what it was, such a unique set of circumstances. Some teams that maybe weren't as motivated as others playing in the conditions they were in a bubble like that. And, the Canucks were able to beat Minnesota and dispatch St. Louis, and the Blues were then the defending Stanley Cup champs. And, they gave Vegas a pretty good fight, but a lot of that was on the back of the goaltending, first Jacob Markstrom and then Thatcher Demko. And really, it was coming out of the bubble that things started to take a turn for the worse for the Vancouver Canucks, because there was this sort of renewed excitement among the fan base here. And it was shortly after the bubble when free agency opened and guys like Jacob Markstrom and Chris Tanev and Tyler Toffoli and Troy Stetcher all walked away from this hockey club. They couldn't retain any of their unrestricted free agents. And then you think back to the shortened season last year under the cover of COVID. And of course, the Canucks were hit harder than any professional sports organization in North America. And there was a lot of talk and back channels here about you know, the way that the organization handled its business and some of the ways that they conducted things, and were they, you know, responsible? I mean, everybody in the world was battling COVID, but no sports organization was hit harder than the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, why did that happen the way it did, and the response to it? And, you know, 2021 has been just a highly disappointing season for a calendar year for the Vancouver Canucks. Last season, they finished dead last in the All-Canadian division. And then this, 8 wins in the first 25 games. So something had to give, and it did earlier this week. And, you know, the biggest single-day house cleaning in the franchise's history. And the Canucks have been around since 1970. But to clear out a general manager and his right-hand man and a head coach and his top assistant coach all in one day, you know, we were expecting and anticipating some change, but I'm not sure that we thought it was going to come that swiftly and touch that many people within the organization. But here we are.
Is this the right direction to take, like a full house cleaning? And like, do you put all like the coaching staff, the general managers, or is it more of an ownership thing? How much of this still falls on ownership's directive and what they saw for this club and the short term vision in the last 2 years?
Right. So to answer the initial question, is it the right move? Until I see who ultimately is coming in to take over and to set the course now for this organization, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment there. But pro sports is about winning. It's a bottom line business. And Jim Benning had 8 years. Not many general managers who qualify for the playoffs twice in that span hold on to those types of positions for 8 years. And so the frustration was running high here in Vancouver. And I think people thought, like, you know, this is a guy that had all the top 10 picks. When you look at Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and Vasily Podkolzin, who's a rookie now, was the 10th overall pick back in 2019. People look at Jim Benning and his draft record, and he was touted as this sort of draft guru, and yet swung and missed completely on Olli Juolevi as the 5th overall pick back in 2016. And before that, the first ever draft pick that he made was Jake Virtanen, who was a 6th overall pick in 2014. And, you know, when you're picking that high, you have to connect. And so to have two guys that, you know, just didn't pan out, Virtanen's playing over in the KHL now, and Juolevi got dealt for depth pieces just before the start of the season. You know, so yeah, the Canucks have done well in the draft with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. But it's not fair, I don't think, to look at just the successes at the draft table. I think you have to take into account some of the key misses as well. And so, you know, you look at this Vancouver Canuck roster. Thatcher Demko was a second round pick, and Nils Höglander was a second round pick. You know, they've done all right a little bit deeper into the draft as well. But even with those pieces, there are still so many areas of concern for this hockey club. And, you know, for me, 8 years of Jim Benning, who himself was a former National Hockey League defenseman, I think his greatest downfall was his inability to adequately assess and then to acquire players that can play defense effectively in the National Hockey League. Right now on this roster, I would say they've got Quinn Hughes and they've got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who they paid a fair price to get and has you know, an outrageous contract and is on the wrong side of 30. But those are their two legitimate top four defensemen. And other than that, they've got guys playing way higher in the lineup than they ought to have. And it's just been a revolving door of swings and misses in terms of acquiring guys that the Canucks felt could credibly play the position. And it just hasn't happened. And so, you know, a lot of times when teams struggle, it's because they can't get a save. And Thatcher Demko has been terrific in goal. And before that, Jacob Markstrom was, you know, a two-time team MVP here before he left in free agency. So you can't blame it on goaltending. The Canucks have had really good goaltending, and yet they have still been a bottom of the standings team for way too long. And so I just think, again, on balance, 8 years, and I'm not sure the club is any further ahead than it was when Jim Benning took over. It probably was time for a change there. And, you know, coaches are hired to be fired. It's the old adage, Travis Green, 5 years, or he was into his fifth year and only tasted the playoffs the one time in the bubble. And even at that, it was because the playoff format was expanded to 24 teams. Remember when COVID hit, the Canucks were right on the playoff bubble, and there was no guarantee that they were going to qualify if the playoffs had been the traditional 16 teams, 8 on each side. And so, you know, their success came once they were invited to an expanded playoff tournament. And once they got in, yeah, they did some good things there, but it was brief and it kind of was a flash in the pan ultimately, because here we are 18 months later from the Edmonton bubble, and this team is in shambles and now trying to figure out, you know, its best course of action to start to move forward here.
Is it kind of odd that they already installed a new coach and his contract, I think, what, runs through 2022-2023 before hiring new front office personnel?
Yeah, and, you know, you'd ask me about ownership, and for, I mean, the Aquilini family, it's three brothers and their elderly father. The mother has passed on now. You know, the three brothers essentially are in charge, and Francesco is the chairman of the Canuck organization. And, you know, he gets accused of meddling all the time with this organization. And a lot of people thought that, you know, his impatience was ultimately what led to the departure of Trevor Linden, who had been hired as the president of hockey operations. And, you know, Jim Benning was able to convince the owner that he could turn this thing around quickly. And Trevor Linden wanted to tear it down and rebuild. And that was a handful of years ago. And it looks now like Trevor Linden had the right idea. But Jim Benning was able to convince the ownership group that, no, he could turn this around in a hurry. And so he traded away a first-round pick to Tampa to get JT Miller. And that trade has worked out. JT Miller has been a heck of a player and is the Canucks' leading scorer. But then to back it up the following year and trade away another first-rounder as it did to Arizona, you know, those are win-now moves. Those are moves that teams that are right on the cusp of winning a Stanley Cup, or at least taking a really good crack at winning a Stanley Cup, those are the kind of moves that those teams make, not a team that's sitting mired in 26th or 27th in the overall standings. And so the prospect covered here is pretty bare. The on-ice product, not good enough. And as a result, it all came to a head, and ownership decided enough was enough. I think the, you know, the crowd chanting "Fire Benning" at home games here recently, and just a lot. I mean, the temperature has been high in this market in terms of unrest among the fan base. And so, you know, I do think ownership has to take some responsibility. And then, you know, you sit here and we talk about, okay, a house cleaning. Well, we heard from Francesco Aquilini, the Canuck owner, on Monday afternoon, first time in 7 years that he has sat in a press conference setting and addressed the media.
Wow.
And he told us essentially that he was the guy that reached out and hired Bruce Boudreau. So you've got the owner now hiring a coach before bringing in a general manager. Like, what are we doing here? 8 years of dysfunction, and it kind of feels like we're starting all over again here in Vancouver with more dysfunction to come. So there are other moves that have to be made, obviously, but Bruce Boudreau has been installed as the head coach, and he's not going anywhere this year. So whoever is brought in as a general manager or a president of hockey operations, he is going to inherit a veteran head coach who has a track record of turning around underperforming teams. But, yeah, I mean, it does sort of feel like your business is being conducted out of order, at least, you know, out of order compared to the conventional wisdom of starting at the top and letting those people hire the people that they want to hire.
What happens with Bo Horvat?
In terms of the big picture, like long term?
Well, in terms of, do you think he gets moved this year? Because those are already swirling. You can, like, there's all kinds of pieces on his future and who he makes the most sense for. Is there any chance that he is a Canuck past this year?
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance that he remains a Vancouver Canuck past this year. He's got this year and next left on his contract. Mm-hmm. Then he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, when you're down at the bottom, I mean, the vultures are going to circle. And
yeah.
So, you know, JT Miller is another guy. Miller and Horvat contract status is the same. They're under contract and affordable contracts, just over $5 million for each of them. You know, for guys that are legitimate top six forwards in the National Hockey League. But I think, you know, Bo Horvat, the captain here, drafted by the Canucks back in 2013. This is the only organization he has known. He said again Monday after the house cleaning that he wants to win here. He wants to be a Canuck. He wants this city to have the success that it deserves. And so, you know, there are some ties here as you know, drafted by the Canucks and as a captain. I think there are going to be some difficult decisions on both sides. But JT Miller might be the guy. Like, I don't know, you know, he's a couple years older than Horvat. I'm not sure that the Canucks will be able to re-sign him when his contract is up. And I don't know that he'll want to re-sign here, quite frankly, depending, and we don't have a crystal ball, but not knowing where the club is going to be in a year's time, an 18 months time. But I think JT Miller is probably the bigger trade chip at this stage. I think the organization values and respects Bo Horvat, and they think that, you know, he embodies a lot of what they want players to be when they are Vancouver Canucks. And you know, a low maintenance guy that just shows up, competes, plays hard, and all those types of things. And there would be a lot of value, but you know, we've seen it around hockey. He's going to have all sorts of leverage and can demand a max contract. And, you know, that's where the organization is going to have decisions. Do they want to commit to 8 more years of Bo Horvat that will take him into his mid-30s? And, you know, he's due for a raise on what he's making. So those are all kinds of decisions that the Canucks are going to have to make. Brock Besser's contract is up this year. He'll be a restricted free agent, but he's got a qualifying offer that's going to require a QO of $7.5 million. And he's really struggled, just 5 goals on the season. So he's a better player than that, a better goal scorer, but it just wasn't happening for him, and it wasn't happening for Elias Pettersson either. So, you know, they need all their best players to figure things out and just start playing better. And they're hoping that, you know, a coaching change and a new voice and just kind of clearing the air a little bit, the black cloud that has been hanging over this franchise for far too long now. They think that they have made these moves, and hopefully they can, you know, players have all talked about a refresh, sort of just kind of a new chapter and turning a page here. And so we'll see. But there is no shortage of talking points. There are no shortage of front burner issues. But the coach and the general manager aren't one of them right now, at least based on the moves that were made this week. But the search for the next hockey boss certainly will remain at the forefront of everybody's mind, whether you're in the media or a hockey fan here in the city of Vancouver.
Who of the young core, which you say is the most untouchable and you're still most excited about in the long term?
I think Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes has done things already in his brief NHL career that we just have never seen in half a century of Vancouver Canucks hockey. You know, he had a disappointing year last year. There were a variety of reasons for that. The entire team did, obviously, with a last place finish. And his defensive play was certainly called into question. Nobody ever doubts his offensive instincts and abilities, but he was just on the ice for way too many goals against and brought on a lot of it himself for decisions with and without the puck. He's got his new contract, got a 6-year deal, missed training camp in the first week of the preseason, but settled in and hasn't looked back and has been terrific for this team and has shored things up defensively. His defensive play has been good. And it hasn't come at the expense of any offense. I mean, he is one of the highest scoring defensemen in the National Hockey League. I had a 4-point night in Ottawa at the tail end of a recent road trip, you know, and that was a career best for him. But those types of nights, not 4 points all the time, but just being so involved in the Canucks offensive generation, able to skate the puck so well and transition it. He's absolutely untouchable. I mean, defensemen like that do not grow on trees, and the Canucks, as I said, they've never had one in their history. So I think they know the worth of Quinn Hughes and the value. Elias Pettersson is just underperformed. But, you know, those first 2 seasons in the NHL when he was Rookie of the Year and backed it up with another basically point-a-game season, that was no accident. That wasn't a fluke. That player is still in there, but his confidence seems shattered right now. And so Bruce Boudreau's job is going to be to try to build that back up and bring that player that was so electric and so confident and scored in his first 10, scored 10 goals in his first 10 NHL games. I mean, burst out of the scene, you know, and people just couldn't believe it. There were comparisons to a guy like Pavel Bure in this market. And that player hasn't been seen here for a little while. He missed the last half of last season with a wrist injury. So, you know, I do think that that has hurt him a little bit this year, but whatever the case, he's a better player than he's shown, and they need that better player to show up here in a hurry. And so I think part of it was a coaching change, just hoping that a fresh voice and maybe some positive reinforcement could sort of reinstill some of that confidence in Elias Pettersson. I think he's untouchable too, but you know, beyond that, the list is pretty short. When you are as bad as the Canucks have been this year and for a while now, I think that they would listen to offers on a lot of their pieces. You know, Nils Höglander and Vasily Podkolzin are 2 guys on entry-level deals. Certainly real value in today's NHL where every dollar matters. So, you know, the other untouchable, probably Thatcher Demko, who just re-upped 5 years at $5 million. No goaltender has played more in the National Hockey League this year than Thatcher Demko, and he's been terrific. The numbers may not show it, but I think the numbers speak more to the defense in front of him than his performance, because he has held them in a ton of games. They've lost a bunch of one-goal games. And I would say that at his price point, Thatcher Demko probably on the untouchable list as well.
I like it. I like it. We'll wrap up here. The next GM for you, who would you target? You could also put yourself in ownership shoes, but with who you think they're going to target. But who would you target right now if you're the Canucks? And then who do you think they might target?
Yeah, I mean, you hear all the recycled names, and I'd love to sort of see a progressive thinker come in. I mean, one of the rumors that's swirling here as you and I are recording this is Back to the Future, Mike Gillis and Lawrence Gilman, who built the team that got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2011. It was the best team in Vancouver Canucks franchise history. Those two were progressive. They were modern, outside-the-box thinkers. They did business differently, but ultimately, they were able to get Daniel and Henrik Sedin to commit to relatively team-friendly contracts for stars that set an internal salary cap. And, you know, from there, Lawrence Gilman worked the salary cap to perfection to allow the Canucks to add the pieces that they needed at the deadline that, you know, got them on the lengthy playoff run. And so there are a lot of people in this market that would love to see Mike Gillis come back, this time as a president of hockey operations, and Lawrence Gilman finally get an opportunity to be a GM after being an assistant GM in Winnipeg and Arizona and Vancouver, and now in Toronto, and a well-respected, well-liked guy. I think he could handle the market. He understands the demands of being a hockey boss in a Canadian hockey market like this one. So I've got some time for that discussion, and I'd love to see what they learned from their first go-round together and if they could make it happen. But remember, it's the same ownership group that fired those two guys, Gillis first and then Gilman when his contract expired. It wasn't renewed. So there'd have to be some fences mended. Beyond that, you know, the list of sort of same old, I would love to, there are so many smart, modern thinkers in the game that deserve an opportunity. And I just think you have to look around the NHL and a guy like Chris McFarland and all that he's done with Joe Sakic in Colorado, Eric Tulsky in Carolina, you know, maybe not the highest profile, but guys that have had a hand in building really good franchises that are legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. So that's the direction I would pursue if I was the Vancouver Canucks, rather than just recycling from the same old pile of guys that have done it before, but are out of the game and looking to get back in. If I was the Vancouver Canucks, I think I'd take this opportunity to interview, pick the brains of a lot of people, get a thorough review of what the outside world thinks of your organization. I hope that they take their time now and conduct an interview the proper way, to find the right persons or people for the job.
I like it. I like it. How do people keep up with your work this week and going forward?
Yeah, well, I host a nightly podcast here in Vancouver called Rink Wide, along with my co-host Andrew Wadden, and live streamed, and then podcast as well at Rink Wide Podcast for all the latest on a daily basis on the Vancouver Canucks. We do a post-game podcast again at Rinkwide Podcast after every Canucks game as well, and find myself pretty active on social media as well. I'm at Patterson Jeff on Twitter, Patterson with one T and Jeff with a J, and at JPat Vancouver on Insta.
Awesome. Well, keep up the great work, sir. Thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.